Welcome to Mindful Social, the show that intersects mindfulness and emotional intelligence with the hectic online world we live in today. This week on the Mindful Social podcast, I chat with my guest, Dr. Marie-Elaine Pelletier, about what resilience really means in these turbulent times, how our cognitive biases get in our way, and how we can make better choices to be resilient and thrive. Listen up and learn about her book, The Resilience Plan, a strategic approach to optimizing your work performance and mental health. Marie-Elaine, it's so great to have you here. I'd like to start, I think, with misconceptions about what resilience means. What do we really think resilience is, and what is it really?
Great question, and absolute pleasure for me to be here with you, Janet. I'm already enjoying this conversation. So, but to start, yes, I think it is a good place to start. We've heard the word quite a bit. We're using it all the time, meaning all kinds of things. A lot of the time in my work, I find people assume resilience is almost a personality trait, something that they have that's part of who they are, and therefore they don't need to do anything about it. That's just who they are. So there's a lot of that assumption. Sometimes there's also the assumption that resilience means persistence, just putting your head down and keeping doing whatever you are asked or have decided you would do at all cost. No, it isn't. Okay, so we'll drop that too. There are a number of misconceptions, but these are two that I hear very often. And understandably, we have a number of these things because even in the academic literature, there is a fair bit of diversity of definitions. The one I use and the one many use is our ability to go through adversity and come out even stronger. So there's a growth element to this. And by adversity, we mean both the acute moments and demands, but also the chronic demands, those that are over a long period of time, and definitely would include demands that are coming from both the professional and the personal side, even if we may have a focus on, say, increasing our resilience in the professional context.
Yeah. And I think that's really important to understand that it is about recovery as much as it is about what's happening to you. We're not those bop it dolls, you know, where you punch it and it hits the ground and then it comes back and it's perfect and everything's fine, because that isn't sustainable, right?
That's right. There is the recovery and even the opportunity to proactively build as well. So there's a recovery after, but we can also, and it's actually both, we can also proactively, I call it often just raising the baseline, right? Mm-hmm. So that when things come up, we're starting from an even higher point of resilience in that moment, in that context.
Yeah. And you know, that as a speaker myself, reading in the book your story about being on the stage and having one of those deer in the headlights moments where you just get distracted and you're like, oh, where was I? And one of the things that, you know, we're all taught, practice your speech, make sure you're ready. And often we're not. I am, of course. Both of us, of course, are as speakers. But you fell back on what you had practiced and your own process so that you could be resilient in what seemed like a lifetime existential experience. And it was only seconds. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, you know, we're all human. And even when your core area of expertise, you know, is whatever, in this case, resilience, it does not change that we are humans and will experience all these contexts and situations as such. And So just so everyone's on the same page, the story Janet's referring to is one that I share in the book where I was on a fairly big stage. It was shortly after return to being in person post-pandemic and all. And it was a big stage with the IMAGs and the whole thing. And I wasn't used to this anymore. I got distracted early in the talk. I didn't sleep well the previous night. There were a number of pieces in retrospective to this context. But bottom line is, I ended up on stage and full blank, zero idea what I just said, zero idea what I'm saying next. Seriously, it's almost weird to imagine that this level of completely gone could happen. It did. And in the book, I'm talking about this situation and how, as Janet said, in the end, it felt like years. It lasted just a few seconds, and I did fall back on my feet, of course. As Janet said, we are ultimately fairly prepared, rehearsed, and all these things, and things do fall back in place. But they did, in part, because I had proactively built resources and resilience that would allow me to do this. And one of these is preparing our mindset. And in this case, I mean, I happen to also have done my doctoral research many, many years ago on social anxiety, specifically fear of public speaking. And so I've worked for many, many people on restructuring their thinking. So it was fairly easy, I could say, I guess, as something for me to fall back on, to move away from, oh my God, they will all think that I am completely incompetent, to they're all rooting for me. They're all hoping I can just get back and keep going right now. They're with me. Mm-hmm. And that in itself decreases the, you know, the alarm center in our brains, the threat that you're experiencing initially, and contributes, amongst many other things, to fall back on your feet, which I did. But all this to say, these situations, as much as we prepare for them to be minimized, they do happen. And whatever work we do, there will be challenging situations, however they look like. And the more we're proactively prepared, the more we'll, like we were saying earlier, start from a higher baseline and be better able to go through.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I love that about how, as we go through the book, we start to really understand how context really matters. You know, that context of, oh, I didn't have any sleep last night. And also at the same time, the audience has already appreciated me. They're here for me. They're paying attention. And it's just that cognitive switch, right? From, oh my God, it's all going to be over, to, oh, they like me. I'm here. I know what I'm doing. I love that. I will use that because it's happened to me. It's happened to every speaker in the world.
I know. And that is a big part of this. Regardless of the work we do, there will be mistakes, problems, challenging situations, and the overall direction. So regardless of what work any one of us is doing in that moment, because even as speakers, we also do other things a lot of the time. It's this approach to mistakes, ideally even in the moment, ideally even if in front of a few hundred people, where we can still say, okay, it's going to go fine. We'll figure this out. We're going. But having prepared for it helps for the brain to pick it up in that moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's go to the context, because you talk about what you call quadrants of context and all the different aspects of context and how that impacts our ability to be resilient. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. And can I tell you, Janet, how I even, why this is there? That will probably, you'll see the link also there. I mean, you've seen it since you've read the book, but just for the conversation, what happened is, in a lot of my work, I'm either working with leaders or professionals who don't necessarily are, they may not be directly in a leadership role, but they related to this analogy that I ended up using, because they would often come to me and say, MH, I've gone through very demanding times already, many times before, successfully. I've been immensely resilient. Everyone knows this. They all tell me, I know it. I've seen it. And right now, this is not my usual self. I'm not doing great. What's my problem? And part of what we would start talking about is their resilience and how that's going. And then they would say, seriously, like, are you telling me that the main thing I need to focus on is this aspect? I would say, yes, seriously. But then to help them see the logic of this, I'd say, okay, let's assume we are in a business right now where one of us has had a fabulous idea to launch a new service or a new product. What would we do? Two options. Option one, we just had this great idea and we launch it. Option two, we just had this great idea and we then look at the market. Who else is offering this? How much are they charging for it? Who is buying it? What forces in the future might impact the demand for this particular new offering? We would do all this, which would then inform our strategy in the launch and increase our chances of being successful. Same thing here. Yes, we want to deal better with all these demands, have more resilience, and we need to take our context into account in a realistic way. That usually makes people say, oh, okay, yeah, I could see that. Makes complete sense. And then with, again, in the spirit of they use these tools a lot already in a business context. And so the one you're referring to, I'm using a few in the book, but one of them is that the SWOT analysis that we would do in business, where we're looking at strengths and weaknesses in the internal context of the business, and then opportunities and threats in the external context of the business. Translating this for ourselves as individuals looking to build our resilience, having realistic visibility on our context is very important. Now, everyone's probably nodding, saying, of course, realistic visibility, yes. Well, here's the thing. Resilient, highly performing, resourceful professionals and leaders tend to be a bit biased on the optimistic side. And that's useful. It has pushed us forward. It has made us ignore the amount of demands and challenges. And so we have pushed forward. That's wonderful. But pushed a bit too far, it also means we're minimizing the demands. We're actually not being realistic about the number we have, the amount we have, the amount of time something's going to take us. And then it just becomes too much. So when I say, yeah, let's look at, for us personally, right now in our internal context, what's helping my resilience? So you could say, okay, a natural tendency to take care of myself, to exercise on a regular basis, for example. What internally hinders my resilience? Well, maybe a tendency to say yes to all the fabulous things that come my way, and then it becomes too much. Then on the external context, what helps? Well, maybe I live in an area where I can actually step out of the door and just walk. I don't have to take transit or get in the car. So a walk is doable, for example. And what is not helping in the external context, let's say, is the amount of demands that are coming, say, from my employer or whatever, that at times are just getting too much. And so, but then you may have other demands, right? So you want to really have really good visibility on all these quadrants with many items in each of them. And once we have this, then we can create a strategy that will be unique for each of us. It will look different for you, Janet, than for me right now, and me in 4 months from now. It needs to be adjusted over time, just like a business strategy. And on top, again, that's the other thing that highly performing professionals and leaders do, is they think about the demands more in terms of their professional demands. Makes sense. And it's as if they assume the demands we have on the personal side are, it's a given that I can manage this and I don't need to put this on the list because of course I'll do all this. I love people in my life, or I love the things that, or whoever, whatever is here. And so we don't put it on the list.
Yeah.
And we have to, because back to your example of, let's say, a startup, many things going on, proceeding with lots of very exciting opportunities, perhaps. Okay. And if at the same time you're expecting your second baby and the first one is in 1 year and a half, not the same thing. That that if that was not your, say, your family context. So it just needs, and it doesn't mean you cannot do it or anything like this. It just means, how are we going to set things up, how each of us will set things up such that this combination of variables in the equation will work. And that's where the customized, individualized resilience strategic plan is so crucial and changes everything.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I can see how valuable that is, and how we also don't take in our own internal stuff. You know, is this going to stress me out? How's it going to create my relationship with myself? Am I willing to commit 24 hours a day for the next week to get this job done? And how that's going to impact me as an individual, as well as my team and my family and my community, as far as that goes.
Yes. And being realistic about it, because the example you gave just now is excellent, obviously, in part because sometimes highly effective, highly performing people will almost assume that if they commit to something, they can make it happen. And it has worked in some contexts for some smaller things. But eventually, as humans, it's not like we can commit to work 24/7 for, say, 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We actually cannot. We do need to sleep. And the absence of sleep, even for one night, we know this from research, has significant impact. It's logical, but we do have research showing it on how we handle difficult situations. And eventually, of course, concentration, ability to make decisions, and then a number of other things. And so, yeah, it's as if at times we act like we could override our health. No, we can't. It is there. And especially, here's the thing, especially as we progress through the through time, through fabulous opportunities, through decades as well. Well, the body, the brain, the levels of energy and everything, we gain fabulous experience, knowledge, and expertise. And since we were 20, the rest has been on a gentle, and at times not so gentle, decline. And so it's not the end of the world, but it's the reality. And if we take it into consideration, then we can keep going with all of our fabulousness. I work a lot with different individuals, of course, but some of them are university professors saying, I know I'm here in this moment and my most important asset is my brain. And I need to make sure at this moment, after now 3 decades of doing this, having reached the level that I want to work at, this is where I can do some of my best work ever. Mm. How do I optimize this?
Yeah. I think a lot of the times we go, well, I did it before, and maybe you did it 20 years ago. You know, I mean, I think this particular book is really useful for people who are working in startups where they're already just going as fast as they can, and not looking at the context and not considering, yes, you know, things progress as we go. And yeah, I started a startup 20 years ago and it was like, yeah, all the time, 24/7. Yeah, can't do that forever. And so it's not just recognizing that you can't do it forever. It's also, okay, let's look at the overall context here. Let's do that SWOT analysis, which, you know, they should have figured out by now, and really find a way to design that so that we can actually use a plan. So let's talk a little bit about, how do we design a plan that we're actually going to stick to?
I know.
That's the hard part, the sticking to it part.
It absolutely is, especially it's even more now in everyone's face in some ways because of the pandemic, during which we heard all of us so much more. So from a, you know, part of me is the psychologist perspective, the other part of me is the business person, but the psychologist part of me is thrilled that we heard as much as we did about the information. But then, even if we have this information, the burnout rates are not even stable, they're increasing.
Yes.
And so what this is telling us is, okay, we have more literacy, more education, more information. We have more clarity. Most people know now that it is research-based, that if we did certain things, like the four highest on this, the list, there, you know, the list is fairly long of things we could do to increase our resilience, but the top ones include exercise, which includes cardio, strength training, and meditative activity, nutrition, relationship, sleep, and then there are many others like volunteer work, time in nature, and pleasurable activities, many other things. But the thing is, even if we have this information, we're not implementing it. What we need is for it to fit into our life. So how do we do this? Number one, given how busy everyone is, I do realize no one has 2 hours a day to think about this and change their lives. So the book is a concise book, number one. You've got a slightly longer flight. You can actually read it, finish the flight with your plan. And number two, I mean this, the exercises are all fairly short. 2 minutes, 5 minutes. I think the longest is 10, maybe 15, but that's it. Mm-hmm. So it does not take a lot of time. I've done it before with other people, with myself too. And what we do is I've extracted some of the things we would do in business here that seems to be the most necessary pieces to create the plan. And these pieces that seem to help people have enough information to create their plan is, number one, revisit their values, have clarity on that. Number two, clarify for themselves their sources, current in this context, current sources of demands, all of them, work and personal, big and small, all of them, and current sources of, I call it supply, almost like in a supply and demand way, but not the same way we would use it in business. But in this case, where is my energy coming from? Mm-hmm. And I tell often this part of the process is the one that generates for some the most discomfort. As they start listing and start seeing. So that visibility, that realistic visibility on the amounts of demands I have on my plate right now, mm-hmm. that is fairly significant, especially after having done the values, which now we start seeing the conflict. It doesn't seem to go in the right direction. And then they notice how the list of supply is not that big. Mm-hmm. Then that's what analysis, so that we have even more clarity on everything in our context. And then, similar to what we would do in business, we would have, say, our goal up here on the sheet. And then we would have, say, three strategic pillars. So high level directions that we will invest in order to reach this goal in the business would be the launch of something. And then within each strategic pillar, you would have tactics or actions. So same here, top of our sheet, we would have, say, increase my resilience. And then each of us would decide on right now for the next, whatever is appropriate period of time, sometimes 3 months, 4 months, if depending on how your life looks like over the next little bit. Mm-hmm. And then you look at what pillars could make sense. Sometimes people will say, oh, I have to have a health pillar. I have not done any of my yearly exams for 7 years. I know I would like to exercise. I've got some equipment and all this. I've not touched any of this. One pillar is going to be health. Okay. Then they'll sometimes realize a second pillar will be, for example, boundaries. Things are coming my way. I'm just systematically saying, yes, I need to develop new ways. And no, it's not going to be just about saying no. Doesn't work. Doesn't work. And that's one of the key things about this. Any of the actions we're going to put under each of the pillars need to be absolutely possible to implement. So you scale them down until they are. So you would not put here something like, if you've not done any kind of exercise, for example, now I'm going to get back to the gym for an hour, 5 times a week. No, you will not. That does not make sense. It's impossible, almost. Not totally, of course, but it's not very realistic to expect to be successful at this going from zero to this amount. Right. So it may be as small as, like, you need to be fairly certain you will do it tomorrow. So it could be as small as, I will stand outside for 2 minutes once tomorrow during my workday. And that is not something we're doing for our physical health. Clearly, it's not going to change much on this side. A little bit, maybe on the meditative, like rest, you know, breathing fresh air for a moment, but not that much. But what we're doing is we've now started movement change. Mm-hmm. And from a psychological perspective, we've made it so doable that we're much more likely to do it. And if we do implement something that we're much more likely to do successfully, it increases our sense of self-efficacy, the belief that we can influence things. And the more we do it, the more then we can build. Mm-hmm. But one action, super small, that we do is immensely better than a list of 25 bigger actions that we're not taking.
Yeah. Which we all immediately come up with, right? We come up with this list and then we say to ourselves, I'm too busy. I'm not going to do this.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I like. You use the activity sheets in the book to guide us through that so that the list that you just gave us a minute ago, I was like, wow, this is sounding really big. But you don't. You break it down into small things. We don't have to spend all our time doing this. And it's really about making it approachable. Something else that I thought was interesting is not only do we make this plan, but we don't do it in a vacuum. We may have other people on our team, our family, our friends. We have to kind of share this to make it real and make it stick, don't we?
Make it real, make it stick. We know from research that when we commit socially to someone close to us, we're increasing our chances of success. Okay. And the other thing too is we're a bit doing a bit of change management also. Mm-hmm. Because for some of us, sometimes the changes we're choosing to implement will be noticed by others around us. And telling them in advance also helps them make sense of it. If we are, and often our own choices will indirectly, potentially, eventually impact others, especially if we have, say, children, our own or other children around us. And so that can have many positive impacts. For example, one person I worked with, she was probably doing things most of her waking seconds. And so one of her pillars was something along the lines to slow down. And then one of her actions was to sit on the couch doing nothing for at least 2 minutes and then growing it in terms of length. And so, and she said, when she was building her plan, I so need this. And my family is going to think that there's a significant problem with me because they've never seen me do this. So then we talked about, yes, communicating it. And they did notice, and she did have children as well. But what a good modeling to do, right?
Yes.
To say, I'm taking this time to do absolutely nothing. There was not a TV on or anything. I think at some point she considered lighting a candle just to have something to look at or whatever. But I think she was also looking at just the leaves and the trees outside.
Mm.
To just do nothing for a moment and then share with others in her family that she was doing this. And it turned out for her to be very significant and felt like decadent almost to take even this short period of time to actually do nothing. So it will vary from person to person, but it will be doable.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm a tiny habits coach. And so I work with people on how to use little things to lead to bigger things. And, you know, that really speaks to what we do as well, because it really is, you can't run a marathon the first time you decide you're going to. It isn't like that. We need to warm the muscles up. We have so many things that we need to do. And when you talk about how we need to tell other people, because we could be disrupting their lives in our family and at work. Okay, we're going to do a SWOT analysis before we do this project, can be very disruptive if you've never done that before. So, you know, it's really important that we do that, not just for a commitment to ourselves, but it also helps the people that we're working with, because now they're like, oh, she's doing that. Wow, I understand why we're doing that. This is great. And it's a way to lift the whole team up, not just ourselves.
Yes. And create, especially, yes, if you're bringing this up, sharing some of your actions in that area with people at work, you're contributing to a culture where we're realistic about the amounts of demands and excitement. Yes, it's all good what we're doing and all, but also being realistic about the demands and therefore the need to make sure we lead our own health here and lead our own self in a way that will allow us individually and us as a team to continue to enjoy what we're doing.
Modeling resilience. I like it.
Yeah.
Well, Marie-Elaine, will you please tell people how they can find you, how they can find the book and pre-order the book, People, trust me, just go ahead and do it.
Yes, one of the advanced readers said, you know, where was this book when I had my burnout kind of thing? Because that's one of the things often my clients have said, this is fabulous to have now. And I wish I had known this earlier. It would have saved me time and pain. And so that's a lot of why I wrote the book, to hopefully do exactly that. TheResilienceplan.com is the link to remember. That's where it's going to take you to everything else that I do, including the book, of course, and otherwise LinkedIn, always good, always happy to hear from people about this conversation or what your thoughts are. Always love to connect.
That's great. Thank you so much. I will share all the links in the blog post and on the podcast. And I really encourage you to reach out to Marie-Elaine and learn more, because the book's really great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Janet.
Thanks for tuning in for another episode of Mindful Social. It's been so great to see the subscriptions growing, and the feedback has really helped me make the show even better. So if you know somebody who needs to be on the show, email me at janet@janetfouts.com. And please send me feedback there too, or post a review on the podcast platform you're listening on. Oh, and do me a favor, share this show on social media or with a friend. Thank you.